Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to Giants Croncast, a podcast chronicling the San Francisco Giants, featuring Brian Murphy and Doug Brazoni, part of FFSN, Fans First Sports Network.
Just hitting record, knowing that Brandon Crawford won't be on it to record anything in relief after everything that happened yesterday. I don't know. I don't want it to feel like a letdown because, you know, the Giants went 4-2 this week. Doug, how are you feeling after this week?
I mean, not too bad. It doesn't make any difference in the grand scheme of things, but when they go 3-0 and then 1-2, it's a little more disappointing than when the second series is a win, even though it shouldn't be. You know, four wins is four wins, but they look pretty bad in a couple games against the Cubs. Even the game they won, the defense looked terrible, but they pulled through it. It's good when the Giants score 13 runs and are able to put a position player into pitch.
I'm sure there's going to be a lot of interesting StatCast data and articles posted about Brandon Crawford pitching. Can't wait to read it.
Yeah, exactly.
We are still being proven correct 3 weeks out from the statement that this is who they are. They're a 500 team. There's a vortex of 500 that they will maybe get two or three games ahead of and then get pulled right back to it. And that's literally what we saw this week with some minor things. I mean, continuing their unprecedented win streak in Coors Field is incredible. They won a game with a comeback that involved no home runs. So there were certainly things that are, I think that's the thing. There are positives almost in every game or almost in every series that the Giants are playing. Big turnaround from last year. I think that's what Giants fans have to kind of like keep in mind, is like they're still turning the ship, but there's quite a lot of things to be excited about. Jock Peterson's multi-home run game on Sunday, that was great. We got splash hit 101. We didn't jinx anybody with our bullpen trust power rankings, Doug. That's good.
I know. We had Junis either at 7 or 8, and he was the bad one against the Cubs. So yeah, we nailed it.
Also, the Giants have clarified something. They were very much like, Sean Manaea is a reliever and we're not going to mess with what's good. So we nailed that too, where he's like, is he a reliever? Is he a starter? We don't know. We're including him. And we got clarification there. The Giants are getting healthier. That's also an important thing. And then I challenged the Giants to show proof of life with Mitch Haniger for this Cubs series. And he prevented the Giants from being no hit on Saturday to show that he is at least briefly alive. He's only mostly dead.
I mean, if he hadn't hit that double, we'd have all been very embarrassed.
Yeah.
So it doesn't seem like a big deal, but it was a very big hit in terms of us remembering that shitty game for years to come.
We're going to get to interesting, concerning in just a moment. We're also going to talk about something else that came up in the news earlier this week about the Giants and their Spanish language broadcasts. And then we're going to do a very brief, hasty preview of the Cardinals series that's happening starting today. But before we do all that, Doug, let's do it, man. Let's talk about these prospects a little bit.
Let's do it.
It seems like every day we're hearing about multi-homer games from just any prospect or like the big name ones. You got your Louis Matos, you got your Marco Luciano, Will Wilson, who keeps jumping back and forth between like, is he a guy? Do you know? Right. He's just a guy. Yeah. And then, you know, you've even got solid starts and exciting starts from Kyle Harrison, Keaton Wynn. He's on the back burner. He might be coming up, making a spot start here pretty soon. And you've even got Kaiwang Tang, who's like turning it around from his, the guy walks and hits batters at an alarming rate. It's staggering, but he's put together, I think, a start or two now where he struck out a lot. It was like a 8-2 strikeouts to walk. So he's even turning it around. So the Giants have a lot of excitement going on down in the farm, to the point that curmudgeonly Giants fans are like, Farhan, let's get Louis Matos up to the big league squad now. How's that making you feel? Let's get into this.
I mean, it's fun that there's guys to get excited about in the upper minors. You know, for a Because for years, it would be like, well, you know, we got this guy in single A who 3 years from now, if everything goes, no, like we're, you know, a couple months from now, it could be, you know, three or four of them who are up in the majors. It's fun. It's exciting. And this is kind of what it takes for Farhan's player development strategy to sort of take root, is it takes a lot of time. You know, you can talk about the guys they already have, but the key to the Dodgers becoming that consistent team is that they keep getting guys up through the minors. And so, yes, they have, you know, they have Kershaw and they have whoever else I don't want to think about right now. I'll not soil the name of this podcast. I'll not soil this podcast with other Dodger names, but they keep getting contributions from guys who are not who are not like the top prospect in baseball, just consistently churning out good players. And if the Giants can start doing that, which is, I think, Farhan's key, then they can at least hope to be in that echelon that the Dodgers are in. So seeing, you know, Matos and to an extent Wilson and Keaton Wynn and all of them start to really have good, consistent performances time in, time out, I mean, it's very promising for the future of the team.
And I think regardless of how it goes for the end of the year, because I'm complete agreement with you, I'm sure their goal right now is like, let's see how many of these players we can fold in to our roster this year. Let's see where we're at the trade deadline, because I have to imagine they're not going to trade any of these guys, the ones that you've been hearing about positively for the last few weeks. I don't see them being like, well, Louis Matos is playing so well, we'll flip him and get Shohei Ohtani. That's not going to happen. I think they're going to want to hold on to them. The Giants have a major league roster, and who knows what the strategy is going to be. The trade deadline's August 1st. I have to imagine July is when we'll actually start to see things in terms of like who's going to make some moves. We don't know what they're going to do, but you know, if they start subtracting some of the major league players, that creates opportunities for these minor league players. And like I said, I think the goal is to fold these players in if they can keep it up as the year progresses. That's it. That should be what we are all expecting. You know, I think that in and of itself is a massive accomplishment. It would show that like, oh, all the plan is coming together. The design, we saw 2021, that, you know, we saw what it is capable of when it's at full power, full strength. But the other part of it was like, well, how are you going to keep finding these young or talented inputs into that model to get you to 107 or 100 plus wins again? We've just been waiting, and we're gonna have Roger Munter on next month, and I'm still gonna ask him the question, Doug. I'm like, is this just luck? So, because in a way, it's sort of like, well, it sort of betrays the idea that it's luck, because it was a terrible farm system in terms of progress, injuries, stagnation, players actually taking steps back, and like just this total view industry-wide that the Giants farm system, you know, for whatever reason was fizzling or couldn't put it together. And now, quote unquote, miraculously, it's all sort of turned around in a hurry in a lot of ways. And there's a lot of positives going on. And I think it's just enough to say positives, because that is in itself, the mindset change, like, oh, we can do this. I don't know. That's what's making me happy. It's put a spring in my step.
Yeah. I've noticed your step is much more springy lately.
Oh, I appreciate you not saying anything about it, or before it would have like made me self-conscious and all that. But yeah, now that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's one of the things that you look at the way the Giants are kind of setting up the farm system. And I'm sure it is partially luck that any individual guy is that good. You know, Matos hitting, I don't know, I haven't looked up his stats, I think 700, right? 750, something like that.
Whatever the slugging percentage of a home run is, yes.
Yeah, exactly. That he just keeps on hitting and hitting. Like, you couldn't expect somebody who's going to be that good suddenly after having a pretty disappointing season last year. But some of it is, like, design. And the design, I think, is just you collect guys with interesting tools, get as many of them as possible. Will Wilson is a good example, because the Giants basically bought him from the Angels for the price of DFAing Zach Cozart. And then you throw all the mechanical stuff at them and see what happens. And you know, eventually some of those talented guys are going to come through and become stars. And you're seeing it. You're seeing it more and more these days.
Doug, what's something you found interesting about the Giants this week?
Brian, I'm so glad you asked that. What I really liked was seeing Patrick Bailey continue to hit. You know, obviously we know about the glove and, you know, he's a catcher. He's not going to play full time. But he had another good week. He had just looks like a major leaguer, and the Giants basically went to Joey Barton like, all right, well, you're going to be in the minors now. Nothing we can do about it. And Patrick Bailey earned that in a way that you kind of expect rookies to regress a lot of the time. We've definitely seen that with Casey Schmidt in the recent weeks, where he's been pretty bad. You know, two extra base hits yesterday aside, though one of them was Mike Chalkman losing the ball.
What a baseball play. Mike Chalkman, known for his glove.
I don't think we could have expected that, considering that Chalkman made like the play of the month the day before, but it happens, I guess. So seeing Bailey just keep hitting and keep showing up and keep being such a strong presence has been really gratifying and really promising.
That's a really good one. Patrick Bailey also having the squeeze play in Colorado. Fantastic, exciting stuff. His defensive runs. I'm always sketchy on Fangraphs defensive runs, but he's at a plus 3.3. And since May 1st, he's basically played in 17 games and his defense has just been tremendous. I mean, he's a positive player across the board. But yeah, Patrick Bailey, the 31% strikeout rate to 3% walk rate, probably not good. But
there is some regression coming.
Yes, yes. But he has been absolutely fantastic. So what I found interesting about the Giants this past week was it's related to our bullpen trust. The pitching. To go back to that May 1st stat, the Giants pitching is the fifth best in baseball. Just overall, not even just talking about the bullpen. Their wins above replacement, according to Fangraphs, 4.6. That's, again, fifth in baseball, behind the Marlins, number one, who are basically six wins, San Diego, 5.7, Seattle, 5.7, Minnesota, 4.7 wins above replacement. They're doing this with three-fifths of a rotation. They're missing, you know, Alex Wood. I don't know if he's going to be a rotation guy, but let's assume that they want him to be, because having back-to-back bullpen games like they did in Chicago against Chicago, you know, that is not a sustainable situation they want to be in. That is not indicative of a team that's got healthy depth or good depth. So, and even though they figured things out with Sean Manaea, or at least they think they have for the time being, which we talked about this, it's like right now it's working. So I'm fine with that. Like, they have a fifth starter, but it's built around the design of a bullpen game. All that said, they are pitching their lights out. They're 22-16 since May 1st. And I think in large part because of that, and I'll talk about that a little bit later, but you know, they're pitching as well as any other team in baseball right now. And I just found that interesting. They go into Colorado. They have, you know, some not shaky starts. It's just like Colorado luck, but you know, Cobb and Webb, they looked good. And even though they gave up more runs than you would think they would give up, but when they're pitching well, but they pitched well and it all worked out.
And then I want to mention Ryan Walker, who had a tough game on Friday, came back on Sunday and looked really good. He pitched more than two innings. And then the third inning he was out there, which is not something he usually does. He doesn't, you know, he's not a three inning long relief guy. The defense just really fell apart behind him, but he was still able to get through it. I really liked, not to get too like gritty gumption points here, but I really liked his poise there. He didn't give up a run, even though I don't know how, because that, or he gave up one unearned run, but it, you know, he kept it together. It's his third inning of work. He threw a bunch of pitches. I was really impressed by the way he did that, because that's, you don't necessarily expect that from a reliever. He threw 51 pitches. He's not a 50 pitch guy.
No.
And so I thought that was incredible.
I saw some criticism of Gabe Kapler that, you know, in at least in Saturday's game to, you know, use and set, it was Friday's game to use Brebbia instead of Walker, which that must mean some of these people were listening to our bullpen trust power rankings when I was like, Brebbia should, yeah, we got to have him come in. Imagine him as the stopper. But they then used Brebbia as the opener the next 2 days. And so if I were to come into, if you were parachuting me into the start of that series and looking at the plan, Ryan Walker is the guy I would have put in that situation. The Giants did what the fans who study the numbers too would have done, because that's how good, that's how confident I am in that guy. He fits their pitching, their reliever profile so perfectly that it's like, yeah, and he's earned the spot. He's looked good. I like that. I'm always excited to talk about Ryan Walker, and I understand he's a reliever and he's going to break my heart at some point.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. And so, I mean, I understand there's criticism of bringing him in, but he's been very good. You know, bring him in on Friday. He's been very good. And sometimes relievers just give up runs. Like, I'm sorry, it happens. It will happen to everyone. Camilo Duvall will have a blown save at some point this year that absolutely pisses you off.
Yeah.
And it won't be Kapler's fault for putting him in. It's just sometimes if you have an ERA of one, every 18th inning you pitch, you're going to give up two runs. It happens.
Yeah. One more thing I found interesting was that the Giants optioned Joey Bart. And you already mentioned it, of course, but I had shower thoughts, Doug, about Joey Bart. And I wonder if, you know, I don't think he's a guy that Farnsworth would have drafted, is sort of the starting point for all this thinking. And he got hit by pitches early in his career or his pro career. He missed some time in the minors. Let's also remember that even though the Giants called him up for the COVID year, that was literally so that he just didn't sit and rot. You know what I mean? So he's had a very, and the team has even acknowledged like his trajectory for development has been, you know, wonky. You know what? I take that back. He has basically a 2-1 strikeout to walk in college with a 950 OPS. I'm sure they would have drafted him, or it's not inconceivable that Farnsworth would have drafted him. All that said, I have wondered if the Bobby Evans crew, development crew, had stayed in and developed him. First of all, the major league team would have continued to be a disaster. There's no question. But would Joey Bart's career path gone a little bit better, differently? Are the Giants, were some of the old hands that were in the Giants system better able to develop catchers? I'm not sure. He's such a bad hitter. What I just found interesting was both he and David Villar seem to be, I think the public comment was sort of that they've been sent down with like an attitude adjustment that they need to work on. I think that was what one of the comments that Joey Bart was making, like, I'm going to try to not internalize the failures. I'm going to try to just have a better attitude about everything, which I don't know if that's some sort of like weird Orwellian thing that the Giants are doing. Like, we're going to knock you back down and just have a good attitude about it. But, you know, he's hitting poorly in AAA on his rehab assignment. He's not like hitting any better. It's not like David Villar, where David Villar is like half as good in the majors as he is in the minors. And he's really good in the minors. Joey Bart is just really struggling to hit right now and put it all together. So what I find interesting is that the Giants are just washing their hands of him a little bit. And I wonder if he's going to even be a trade chip. Like, have they tainted the possibility of moving him in a move as a deal? Is he so not wanted by the rest of the industry? Because you still have the Billy Eplers out there, Doug, who will trade for a guy like Joey Bart and maybe give you a couple prospects that you can use. And obviously that number of receptive teams is dwindling as everyone gets on the same pattern of analyzing player performance. But I just find it interesting how they've handled Joey Bart. And I wonder if it's hurt or hindered their ability to utilize him in any positive way for the organization going forward.
So before Buster Posey retired after the 2021 year, I thought they were going to use Joey Bart as a trade chip. It kind of made a lot of sense to me. And then, of course, they needed a catcher, so they couldn't do that. But he had always been someone who was a little bit disappointing. And you could see a team, even a smart team, it doesn't have to be a Billy Eppler. It doesn't have to be, you know, that kind of GM who trades for Darren Ruff and it goes badly. But it could be someone who's like, no, our mechanics guys can fix him. We have something that we see there. We know what we want to do with him. We'll see if, you know, it could be something like that. I think with another couple years of Joey Bart kind of proving that he's not a very good hitter, that's probably fallen by the wayside a little bit. The one thing that's been, that was surprising to me this year with Joey Bart is that he did not homer in 84 plate appearances. And he just, you expect to see more power. Like, even if he's striking out a lot, he had five doubles. That was it for extra base hits. That is a singles hitter. Mm-hmm. And the one thing about Joey Bart is you expect him to be able to hit the ball hard and hit it out. And he wasn't doing that. I don't know if that's swing changes that the team made. I don't know if that's just the league knowing how to pitch him. But that was pretty concerning. And so, yeah, he's got to figure it out. And maybe it'll be in the minors and maybe it'll be in another organization.
Doug, anything else you found interesting?
No. Brian, is there anything you found concerning this week?
I'm saying this after they've scored 13 runs in a game, so I'm going to sound like a maniac, but the offense actually concerns me. For all the dap and praise I was giving the Giants pitching staff, it's remarkable to look at that top five that I mentioned and see how all those teams are not like, you know, they're not like winning in bunches. The Marlins went 21-16 again since May 1st. The Padres 17-19, Mariners 19-17, Twins 16-21, Giants now 22-16, which is, that's the best of that group. But you would kind of think if the Giants had like a top five pitching, maybe it wouldn't be so close to 500. Maybe it'd be a little bit more. Maybe they're closer to 25 wins. In any case, the Giants offense, just by weighted runs created plus, was 98, which was like 19th in baseball. In the same span. So they've got top five pitching and they're in the bottom third of the league effectively with their hitting. And that's concerning to me. They gave almost 60% of their plate appearances to guys who wound up hitting below league average by weighted runs created plus. You know, Blake Sable's kind of the pivot point. When I started looking at the data, he was 99 weighted runs created plus, and he had such a big day on Sunday. He's effectively a league average hitter. In sabermetrics, there's sort of an obsession with like, well, it's not enough to be a 100 to be league average. It's not even enough to be over 100. It's the 110 plus guys. Those are the good ones. Those are the actually good hitters. And so if you just look at it at that level, I don't know, maybe you can explain why that's the case. The Giants had they're very top heavy on their lineup. Michael Conforto, Jock Peterson, Austin Slater, Lamont Wade Jr., Patrick Bailey, they all had 110 or better weighted runs created plus since May 1st. And that represents only 40.8% of the Giants plate appearances. So the majority is going to guys who are actually below that or below league average entirely. And you've got guys, Brandon Crawford, Casey Schmidt, Wilmer Flores, Brett Wisely, Mike Yastrzemski, Mitch Haniger, you know, you got Bryce Johnson, Joey Bart, Cal Stevenson, David Villar in there as well. But, you know, got kind of like a weird top heaviness with the lineup right now. And I think they need a little more balance. So it's a little concerning for me.
Yeah. And I was also going to say the offense, because what you saw this week is how feast or famine they were. They had two different games where they went into the sixth inning without a hit. One of them, you know, took until the eighth inning. We already talked about that. But one of those is a game in Coors Field. How do you get to the sixth inning in Coors Field without a hit? It's very surprising. They obviously came back to win that game. It went well overall. But when you think about what this team should be doing, they should be hitting better. You know, you should be seeing that kind of more reflected throughout the lineup. It's one of the things we talked about, that with when Estrada and Jock came back, that they were going to have more length in the lineup. And what's really happened is they've seen some regression from some of the guys who've been in there. And so my concerning thing for the week, which kind of ties pretty directly into this, and I've already mentioned it, is how bad Casey Schmidt's been at the plate lately.
Mm-hmm.
The last week he's been obviously he had two extra base hits yesterday. The only one of them was really an extra base hit. But in the month of June, not counting yesterday's game, Schmidt was hitting, before coming into yesterday's game, we'll say, in the month of June, Schmidt was hitting 095, 136, 143. And I mean, that's what it feels like too. You know, you're not watching him being like, oh, he's hitting the ball hard. It's just going right at people. It's one of those things that happens. But no, he's, you know, maybe not deserved to be that bad, but you can tell he's not hitting the ball right. And they're starting to kind of talk about it a little bit on the broadcast, the way they do when they're like, when a guy has to hit better or he'll get sent down, but they don't want to say that. They're like, well, you know, the league's adjusted him. He has to adjust back. And that's really what's been happening with him, where the league knows that he's not going to walk. You know, he's walked once, right? But they can throw it out of the zone. They can throw the Aaron Rowan slider 3 feet off the plate, and there's a good shot he'll swing at it. He was kind of the thing that gave the Giants life there for a week or two in May. And that has completely disappeared. When he's in the lineup, he is dragging it down.
Just to give people a sense of what's going on here, and two things. One, it shouldn't come down to Casey Schmidt. He's supposed to be being folded in, but the Giants are in the situation they're in because they don't have a lot of depth there. Casey Schmidt, since May 1st, has been their 10th best hitter, and he has an 88 weighted runs created plus, just slightly better than Wilmer Flores at 86. Doug, Brandon Crawford has been a better hitter than Casey Schmidt since May 1st, and he's played in 12 fewer games. So, and Brandon Crawford is not good. 89 weighted runs created plus. We've seen him be a little bit better. Tyro Estrada's has just tumbled so much, and he's, even though he missed some time on the IL, he has been scuffling of late. So it was good to see him getting it going on Sunday. One other point about Sunday's game: the Giants are supposed to beat the shit out of the Cubs. No, Wesneski is like their worst starter. Their bullpen is not great. The Giants should not have struggled as much as they did in the first two games. Although you look at it and it's like Stroman and Kyle Hendricks, those would be starters on the Giants for sure. So it's kind of like not that surprising. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, them blowing out the Cubs on Sunday is not that big of a surprise. And hopefully they'll keep it over to the Cardinals series, which we'll talk about in a second, because that's another team they should hit well against. But yeah. I like your Casey Schmidt point, but in the larger context, it's kind of like that Adobe AI, the thing that people are doing. Like, here's what the rest of the image looks like. It's like Casey Schmidt should not extend beyond the boundary. He should be considered as like a rookie figuring things out, not as some sort of lineup linchpin. You've got Mike Yastrzemski, who's hitting worse than him. That's not what they planned. Mitch Haniger is hitting worse than him by a lot. That's not what they planned. You add those two guys in, and they're, you know, Blake Sable is hitting better than Mike Yastrzemski and Mitch Haniger and Wilmer Flores. Is that the situation the Giants thought they would be in? That anyone thought they would be in? No. Any other things you found concerning?
No. No, nothing I'm interested in.
Well, this wasn't something that falls under interesting concerning because I wanted to actually spotlight it, but there was an article that John Shea wrote in the San Francisco Chronicle, and I simply piggybacked on McCovey Chronicles, but the Giants are cutting costs with their Spanish language broadcasters by not broadcasting all the road games, by not traveling their broadcasters for all the road games either. And 35 road games are not doing. This is a practice that's been going on since 1998, I believe. The Spanish language broadcasters, of course, get paid a fraction of what the English language, the primary team, does. I thought they were all on the same team, right? John Miller, Dave Fleming, they always talk about the Giants broadcasting team, and he mentions Tito Fuentes on the Spanish side, the lead guy there. There's this guy, Jason Pearl, who I immediately didn't like reading his quote, and then I saw a picture of him. I liked him even less. But, you know, this is a long time practice by the Giants. And, you know, serendipitously, I've been talking about the Giants Spanish language broadcast early in the year because I've been listening to them because of the delay in MLB at bat app. And I'm not going to sit here and say this is some sort of injustice. This just seems like an ugly business practice that is acceptable to most people. And I think it just sort of betrays whatever image the Giants are trying to push to the community. And, you know, don't believe them. I think it's pretty gross. But I don't know, Doug, did you have any reaction to that news?
On the one hand, it's not surprising. That's exactly the kind of thing you think a team would do. But on the other hand, it's like, guys, what's the point of a broadcaster? It's to expand the long-term reach of the team. And every game you're not broadcasting is like, is a failure of that. You know, I know that businesses aren't very big on investing in the future when there's a bottom line hit today, but it's such a no-brainer that you try to get every fan you can, because those, if a 10-year-old who speaks basically just Spanish becomes a Giants fan today, he'll be a Giants fan for like 60 years. That's such a huge opportunity just from a purely mercenary point of view to make money off it, or her. I'm woke. And so to see them just not doing that, you know, spending what, 35 games not having a Spanish broadcast, for road games, not bringing them along because it's cheaper. It's such a weird, weird thing to do, especially because the only real cost to bring them along would be the hotel and the per diem. I assume they would come on the team plane. It's not like you have to pay for travel.
That's why I'm looking at it and I'm going like, it's such a, the cost, like, what is it paying for? What is the expense saved actually paying for? And the idea that they don't even consider a delay or like a, you know, an in-studio broadcast with some sort of delay. It was a bizarre thing to read. And it's just seems like, okay, so now this piece of news is out there. And I know that there are older fans who don't care. And this isn't for you. You're going to die soon. And the world is not for you. So don't worry about it. Don't sweat this small stuff. But I just think it's a very strange situation that they would put themselves in, because Spanish speakers in the state of California, it's the language that's spoken the second most in the state. And you're about to be the only team in Northern California. That seems like a prime opportunity to grab some hearts and minds there. I love that the article mentions what the A's do. They broadcast only 71 games, road or home. They only travel to San Francisco. And it's like, what was that? What was that balance? It's like, no, the Giants do something, do a terrible thing when they can afford not to, but it's not as bad as what the A's do because the A's are terrible at everything. I'm like, that's not news. So why is that in there? It's weird that the Giants have their Spanish language broadcasts are managed by someone else who doesn't handle the primary broadcast, the English language broadcast. Isn't that weird? Wouldn't it fall all under the same umbrella? It's very strange.
Yeah, but maybe that guy just doesn't speak Spanish.
Yeah, it's unclear if Jason Pearl speaks Spanish.
Yeah.
So it's bizarre. It's bizarre all the way around, and it's a 25-year-old practice that seems like it's worth shining a light on and investigating and talking about. It's like 25 years. You guys are probably making some really archaic data-driven decision-making over there. Like, maybe you need to update your numbers a little bit or your perspective. All right, enough of that unpleasantness, Doug, but I hope something changes for the better. Tito Fuentes is great, by the way. Just want to throw that in there. Not great, the Cardinals, who the Giants will be facing this week. And I got to tell you, Doug, whenever it's a bad team, it's just an old thing. It's like, and it's on the road. I'm like, the Giants should be okay against the Cardinals. The Cardinals are 27-39. Can you believe it? I think sometimes we all forget, it doesn't matter how the Cardinals season is going. They're going to put it together, figure things out, go on a run, and then be in the NLCS somehow and lose 4-2. Like, that just seems like the arc of every Cardinals season. But this year it might not actually happen, even though the NL Central is kind of a mess. Their best hitter is still Paul Goldschmidt. How? How has that happened? How? He's 35, Doug. I refuse.
But the dark magics.
Yes. He is a 2.1.
I spelled that with a K, by the way. M-A-G-I-C-K-S.
I could hear it. It was a hard K.
Yes. It's a hard K. Absolutely.
35 years old, and the dude is still a 2-win player. Legitimately, 140 weighted runs created plus. He's still great. Nolan Gorman, also right there, 140, 23 years old. Lars Nootbaar, still think he's on the IL. Nolan Arenado scuffling this year, but still 119 weighted runs created plus. It's their pitching where they really fall down. It's like one of the worst pitching staffs in baseball. The Giants on the road, not great, but the thing is that their team is mostly competitive on the road. They can hang in games for the most part. Doug, what do you have to say?
The Cardinals pitching is bad. coming into Sunday in the month of June, the Cardinals have had four pitchers with an ERA under 450. One of them has pitched two innings. One of them has pitched two and a third innings. That's Ryan Helsley and Steven Matz, respectively. The other two are starters. They've been actually good, Jack Flaherty and Jordan Montgomery. Everyone else has been bad. That one guy, Genesis Cabrera, has pitched four innings with an ERA of 450. Everyone else's ERA over five. So Miles Michaelis, ERA of 573 so far this month. Adam Wainwright, 506. Jordan Hicks, just flat six. Giovanni Gallegos, 12 in three innings pitched. I mean, they cannot seem to avoid giving up runs, which is delightful because I don't care for the St. Louis Cardinals.
Me neither. And another part of this is their defense, which you would think the Cardinals are a fundamentals team. They're one of the worst defensive teams in baseball. They're right now just a little below, but they're worse than the A's, you know? So it's like, if the Giants can somehow avoid striking out and the Cardinals staff is not a high strikeout staff, then putting the ball in play will be very helpful. So we'll see what happens there. And I'd like to think that I'm saying it again, Doug, Mitch Haniger, come on, show us you're still alive, man. Let's do it. Have a big series. All right. We're podcasting on Fans First Sports Network at Fans First SN. Also check us out on Twitter at Giants Croncast. Doug, what are you writing this week and where?
So I am at giantsdoug.substack.com Tuesdays and Thursdays. I believe I will be writing about Casey Schmidt on Tuesday.
Oh.
So let's see if he can have a huge game on Monday and completely change the tenor of my article. And then on Thursday, I am writing about how Brian is a big dummy head who steals article ideas.
What did I steal? Oh, I guess I'll have to find out on Thursday. On Thursday, we'll be back with our preview of the Dodgers series and talk about any other exciting things that might have happened down on the farm. Because God knows, Doug, that's where it's all coming from. It's where all the excitement and joy is coming from. So
it's all coming from the farm and also Brandon Crawford pitching.
And about that Cardinals series, when you're done with this episode of the Croncast, head on over to Meet Me at Mutual, the St. Louis Cardinals podcast on Fans First Sports Network. I did about a half hour interview with Daniel there, who runs the show. It goes in a little more depth, a little more detail than Doug and I get into in this one. But if you want more Giants coverage by me, you can head on over there. All right. So until Thursday,
go Giants.